if you missed it, Roe v. Wade for Men. That's the title of what is called a long shot. It's a legal campaign aimed at giving men the chance to opt out of financial responsibility for raising a child if they, like a woman, have a right to choose. Do they have a right to choose?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I say no, too.
No, I didn't.
Good for you, man.
Oh,
way to
God,
lay it out there.
I know.
Yeah. No, I say no. I say if you're having sex with someone, it comes with a certain risk of having a baby.
Ooh.
It just does.
Well, it comes with a certain risk of having a baby, but is it a lifetime commitment?
Well, it is certainly for the mother. It's the mother who ends up with the bigger end of the responsibility, usually. Although financially, some guys would argue, oh, I got to keep paying
right,
for this thing. I never see.
Right.
But here's the deal: you have a baby. The woman right now has a right to choose. Mm-hmm. As much as I was raised Catholic and all, I'm kind of one of those on-the-fencers. I would never take away a woman's right to choose, but I also couldn't envision not having a baby if I were blessed with a uterus, which I don't have.
You can have mine.
Yeah. If it were me, if I were a woman, which is so hard for me to say, I don't know what it would be like to be a woman. I'd never leave the house, I'll tell you that. But
Especially once you have four kids.
Yeah. He won't come to work. He's just so thrilled.
Can't we do this over the phone?
The point I'm making is this. So it's very hard for me to say anything except that I think this guy is a flimball. Personally. Here's what happened. If you want to know the story, he had a girlfriend. His ex-girlfriend had a baby. Mm-hmm. And he told her that probably he wanted her to get an abortion. She chose to have the baby and wants him to, you know, pay child support because he fathered it. And it does suck that, you know, you fathered a kid and you got to clean up the rest of your life. You have to be responsible on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way it should be. I don't know. You think I'm crazy? Or do you think there should be a Roe v. Wade for men? So here's what they've done. They filed,
With that name alone, it should be just a little box on the shelf next to that beard dye.
Roe v. Wade for men.
Just for men. Just sprinkle it on your crotch, and tomorrow you're worry-free, my friend. Wake up with a hangover and don't worry about last night.
Roe v. Wade for men. The new, from Clairol.
Yeah. The name itself's a little spooky.
1-800-252-1025. You can get in on this discussion.
Half of that in there is yours. If you slept with a girl and you made a baby, you had unprotected sex, you made that call, half of it in there is yours. Cook it in the oven. Half the bun's yours. You can't ask for your half back. You can't tell her that she can't have the baby, even though half of it's yours. So by nature's design, guys skewed from the get-go.
Yeah.
He's got no say over what's going on inside
her
body.
Yeah, but if he didn't go in there, then there's no chance of having a baby. Zero. So if you want zero chance of having a baby, take care of yourself, as my wife would say.
That box is a different shelf on the aisle, by the way. That's on aisle 5.
Or should there be Roe v. Wade for men?
Oh, God.
Our society has deemed men that have babies with women and then, for more or less, abandon them and leave single moms behind and don't support them as total losers. And I think that's a perfect brand for those kind of people.
Kind of people, yes.
You know, I think if you're going to have a kid, that's part of you walking around out there. You've got to own up to your responsibility here. I don't see...
So you're with me, Joe.
I hate to... I don't
What do you mean? Why do you hate to say that? How about once in a while it would be fun to agree with me?
I don't hate to say that I'm with you.
Yeah, go, baby.
I've tried to look at this as objectively as possible, and I just hate to say it, but I don't think this men's rights thing has... any kind of
it doesn't
basis.
Have legs?
No, no, not at all.
Doesn't have arms, doesn't have hair, doesn't have teeth,
doesn't
have eyeballs.
Uterus.
Doesn't look like you at all, does it? Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? For one night of, you know, say you didn't just get too drunk at the NFC Championship game and you didn't just lose your wallet, you lost your mind.
What if
and
that
now,
happened to you on that night at the NFC Championship game? God bless
coming.
It. I know you would never cheat on Kelly.
Yes,
but what if you were so blacked out you didn't even know you were cheating on her and the next thing,
imagine
9 months later, someone comes out of the woodwork and
look
she's...
Look at you. It looks like a little pizza box with a diaper on it. That'll look at it right there. It's you, Joe. Can't deny it. Give me $500 a month for the rest of your
life. You would pay.
You should have thought about that that night.
Yeah,
then.
I
would pay too.
You kinda
I would name him Matt or Sean or something like that.
For the moment.
Yeah, I would have to own up to it.
Nickname him Lofa.
You know, the man isn't the one that has to... God, this sounds like I'm going to agree with Bob, too. The man isn't the one
You're
that...
You are going to be forced to agree with me, because
no,
I'm right.
I'm going to continue to straddle the fence on this one, if you'll pardon the expression. But the guy is not the one that has to put their body through either situation, be it the abortion or delivering the child.
Right.
So it is more whether the woman...
Yeah, it's a speeding
okay,
ticket.
Okay, well, if you're a woman...
It's a speeding ticket for your little swimmer.
For the rest of your life?
If that's how babies work.
Babies
don't come with a balloon payment.
I'll show you the montage. I understand how this process financially
works. You have a baby,
I
know.
I got a couple of them. My 17-year-old costs more money than the little one. I understand how this works. But, okay, so she's got the decision. She's got all the power in whether she has it or not. Say, okay, look, here's the deal. Half of that's mine. I got nothing to do with that. But if you decide you're going to go on with this, sign right here because I'm off the hook financially.
Whether we all agree with this or not, obviously there are a lot of people that either don't agree or don't practice what they preach, because I saw an ad for a plumber yesterday that said discounts for senior citizens and single moms. If there's enough single moms out there, that a plumber's giving them a discount.
He's giving them a little more than a discount.
Yeah,
he's coming over to lay some pipe. Okay.
You really can't call that an untapped market, can you?
James in Federal Way, where are you in this?
Yeah, I agree with this 100%, because the bottom line is, you know, nowadays we make our own choices. I mean, she can have an abortion, and if she decides, if he says when she becomes pregnant, and it's common knowledge to both of them, she says, I want to have this baby, and he says, I don't want to have this baby. If she decides she doesn't want to have the baby, he should be responsible for half of the cost of the abortion. And if she chooses to have that baby, and he says he does not want that baby, he should not be held responsible. That's her decision.
Of course, that would amount to men forcing women to have abortions against their will.
No, it wouldn't.
Well, yes, it would.
It would imagine.
No, that doesn't
yes.
have anything to do
or,
with it.
Or be financially unable
she
to take care of the child.
Yeah. Of raising it,
that's the
her,
choice you have.
That's her choice.
Now, he's agreeing with me here. If she say, look, you know what? I'm a scallywag. I'm leaving on a merchant marine ship in the morning. We made a baby. I want no part of this. I'm not going to be around. I'm not going to give up my dream of coconut drinks for the rest of my life because we had one night unprotected sex. If you want to carry on without me, no going into this, and I ain't going to be here with a checkbook. Sign here. I'm off the financial hook.
Well, then, would you say that it would be different if the woman got pregnant and made the decision that she didn't want to have the baby, but the man wants her to have the baby, so now she's forced to have the baby because the man wants her to?
Did you enjoy saying have the baby four times there? You seem to have a real smile on your face.
Well, you're glowing. You're glowing in there.
She's got a little glow to her. Kim and Everett. Hello, Kim.
Yeah, I just had a point. Basically, regardless of what your moral issues are or who has what right, the bottom line is most women can't support a child on their own. And so if a father doesn't pay child support, that means the taxpayers are going to have
That's
to pay
right.
that child support.
Yeah. And I don't call it the bottom line. I call it the baby's bottom line. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. The baby is going to have to be taken care of, and because you are the man, because you made it happen, ultimately, that falls on you. It's tough. There's a simple solution if you don't want to be involved.
Yeah.
Loneliness.
Keep in your pants.
Hey, it's not that bad.
Yeah,
you're
doing it.
I'm doing it just fine.
She is just as responsible for that baby, for the unprotected sex, as the guy is.
Yeah, but the difference is we can't make this a fair situation no matter how hard we try. Nature does not make it a fair situation.
No, stick it to the guy.
Well, you stuck it to us, and we have to carry the baby because of it. So that's why we're in this situation.
Kim and Puyallup, go.
I guess I have a problem with both issues. How many times are, you know, if this passes, how many times are men going to say, oh, I didn't want the baby when we did this, even though they didn't do anything to protect themselves? Or not that I'm saying that the men should be the ones to protect themselves.
Right, it would be a tremendous out for men, and it would leave women with facing a choice of an abortion they didn't want.
Exactly.
And it would
so
leave or babies poorer than they would have been had the parent actually been responsible for the fact that they created a life.
But I also know that there are women out there who do this to men, and it's so unfair.
Oh, yes, and there are bad women.
None of us say there aren't bad women.
Man trappers.
They're really bad men, and there are bad women,
man-trapper.
Too.
Man-trapper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Lori?
Yeah?
Speak.
I think that it's a double standard. I think that men should be able to opt out, too. You said that sex was a choice, and a consequence of it could be a possible baby. Well, it's a consequence for a woman, too. And if she chose to have the sex, she chose to have the child.
Yes, and if it were just a man and a woman, just a man, mm-hmm. just a woman, business dealing, two people, equal human beings.
Sign here, sign here.
Sign here, sign here, sign here.
Initial that.
Initial that.
This, notary public.
Let's
do it!
Then I think it would be very fair, but you're forgetting someone.
Yeah, but the other thing you guys aren't talking about is adoption. You're forgiving adoption, too. I think you choose what you do with your body, and if you choose to have sex, you choose consequences. And you're right. It is unfair. The women do have a bigger burden.
So that's an interesting idea.
We're doing with our body. And
so
if you
would say,
to have sex,
okay.
You're choosing the consequences.
So you would say Roe v. Wade for men would be okay, and
I
if the woman
wrong,
didn't like it, she could always...
Can
I finish, too? She, if
Hold
the
on,
woman
he's
didn't
almost
like
finished.
It, yeah, I'm almost there. If the woman didn't like it, she could give up the baby for adoption, and so then this whole complaining about it would be pointless.
Right.
I see. That's a pretty good argument.
So I don't think it's fair to say that the man has to support this child that they didn't want because the woman wants it. And there are women out there that get pregnant just to have a baby and have some guy support it.
Thank you. Pete, you're up.
Okay.
Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Bob, I just wanted to tell you that you're totally wrong.
Thank you.
The guy does need to have the right to say no if
Hold
he didn't
on,
want
say
the baby.
That again.
He didn't get her pregnant alone. She was involved, too.
I know that.
You know, so to say that the woman can decide 3 months later, but the guy made the decision at the point of the act is just not fair to men.
Well, I understand it's not fair to men.
You're
and men should know
men
that going
girl.
In. It's never going to be fair to men.
Not,
and Pete, you know what was really not fair to the baby? Because shouldn't you, before you come into this world, have a little conference with St. Peter and God, and you look at these two parents and you go, I don't want those parents.
Oh, boy.
You know,
talk about an opt-out.
And the woman just before me actually took my next point, which was adoption, and Bob... 48 years ago, I was put up for adoption, and I am thankful that the people who bore me had the bravery to put me up for adoption because they couldn't raise me.
Mm. I wish it was human nature to do that every time that it should be done.
I wish it was, too, because we got so many kids raising kids and so many good adults who can't have kids who could do such a great job of raising them. Adoption is one of our still hidden secrets in this society, and it's something that should be out there on the front pages.
Thank you, Pete. Daryl in Tacoma.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Okay.
Hey, I have a different take on this. You know, I think that if the woman doesn't want the baby and the man does, she should have to have the baby. She should have to go through the pregnancy, and then the man has all the rights. If she has the right to say, no, I don't want it, he should have the right to say, yes, you're going to have it.
That's the point that I made, but you're forgetting, again, this is not a fair situation, no matter how, you can't make it a fair situation. You guys don't have to carry anything for nine
well,
months.
Well, if a guy does that, if a guy decides he wants the baby and she gets to carry the baby,
he should actually have a giant tumor injected
right.
into his abdomen
wrap it out.
For the same time.
Right,
it should
right.
be basketball
right.
size.
A bowling ball size tumor that needs
yeah.
to be C-sectioned.
Yeah, something should
out
happen to his
time.
Body that makes it him going
That's
through
terrible.
The same
and then
thing.
And his breasts need to hurt
we
for months.
We can fake it as best as we possibly can.
Come over
can.
And rub his nipples with sandpaper for
saying.
A couple
you
weeks after.
That's what I'm saying. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Thank you, Daryl. Joe.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Hey.
Hey, you know, there's been a lot of interesting points about this, but here's my point. And the deal is, we have consensual sex with another adult. You get pregnant. You talk about it. The woman says that she wants to keep the baby as a man. It's your responsibility. The decision's, you know, already made. Now, in today's society, there are tons of guys who get women pregnant and leave them. That's why we have so many single moms. But this Roe v. Wade for men, no way. That just opens it up to basically a free pass for guys to, you know, skip out without any responsibility when they should be taking responsibility.
I'm with you, Joe. And NEA, if everyone who's calling is pointing out the inequities of how it's not fair between men and women, and guess what? It's not. Women
yeah.
have the power.
Yeah.
Women have that magic spot. That we crave, and they always will.
Right, you will.
Oh
you do.
God,
yep.
you guys!
Well, you do, and then
right.
and
so
you
lucky.
Look, it, look,
Candyland,
Candyland.
Yes, yes.
That's
and,
us.
And men, on the other hand, have advantages in work and in business, and we have our advantages that are never going to be fair to women.
Right.
Deal with it, folks.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually.
Yeah.
How about that?
I know. Never, ever, ever replay this part.
Well, Casey, you know, Bob's right this time.
Once in a while.
Once in a while.
Okay.
Like a broken hey, clock. Thank you. Tony, go ahead.
Hi. I was just saying that isn't it the female's, ultimately the female's responsibility to have her birth control?
Excuse me.
Oh no!
Hold
oh,
on!
No,
wait, hold on! Hold on! Zog on line five.
Come on now, it's her choice to have the baby or not.
No.
And if she's going to have unprotected sex, then she's the one that should be. I think that she's the one that should ultimately be responsible for making sure that she's on birth control.
Maybe you. Bertha have diaphragm. What do you know? Morning after pill. Good.
No, I agree with you, pal. I agree with you 100%. You know, it takes two to tango.
Well, it also,
and should they sell stuff for her, too?
Well, have you never seen those little packets of fun rubbers at 7-Eleven that you could buy for yourself?
You mean the balloon animal kits? Yeah, I got a ton of those.
You're right.
If she doesn't want a baby, then she's the one that should take the measure to make sure 100% that she doesn't have a
you
baby.
Know, some women actually can't take the pill for health reasons, though. So, that I mean, it is a mutual decision.
And there is no 100%.
There is no 100% too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here is Tracy. Tracy.
Good morning.
Hi.
Actually, what my feeling is that two yeses make a baby, not one.
Two yeses.
We're all supposed to be mature here.
That's right.
Well, one yes and 8 shots of tequila can make a baby too.
One yes and a where am I can make a baby.
Yeah.
You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on. I just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn.
Best-selling author and Money Magazine editor Gene Chatsky says, getting out of debt is like, losing debt is like losing weight. You take off a little bit every day, stick with a simple plan, and the next thing you know, your debt is slender, like you. Her latest book is called Pay It Down, From Debt to Wealth on $10 a Day. You've seen Gene on CNBC. Of course, the Today Show, live with Regis and Kelly. Gene Chatsky, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Thanks. Hi. How are you guys?
Very good. Thank
good.
You.
Good.
So, Gene, I'll ask you right off the bat. Some people might look at you and say, well, Gene doesn't have that much to worry about, right? She's on the Today Show. But have you ever been in debt yourself?
Absolutely. I moved to New York City, and I tried to do it on a salary of $11,000 a year.
New York?
New York. New York. And I parked my car on a street near this apartment that I was subletting in Brooklyn because I had moved from Connecticut where you had to have a car. I came outside the next day. The car had been sideswiped, completely totaled. So at that point, I was in over my head, not earning enough money to bail myself out. I ended up, you know, scrambling, which is what everybody who's in debt does. They start scrambling. They figure out if there are other ways to sort of get yourself out of this jam. But no, I know what it feels like to have the phone shut off, and I know what it feels like not to be able to pay your bills.
Wow. Did you ever shiver with no heat?
No, I did have heat. I think I had a nice landlord who was protecting me at that point. But no, I didn't have the heat turned off, thank goodness.
But you had no phone. Or you had a cell phone still,
are you guys
right?
There? I can't
hear
you.
Oh, Joe, she didn't hear you, Joe.
Did you have at least a cell phone?
No, this was actually pre-cell phones. This was pre-cell phones and just as the internet was starting to take off. And I kind of came a little late to the cell phone party because I've been working, you know, on the Today Show for a while now. But before that, I was working as a magazine journalist, and magazine journalists don't make very much money.
No,
so
they don't.
It really
You're freelance?
Took me a little while to get a computer and get with technology and sell the car and deal with life. But what I've learned over time and what I've learned in working with these families on the Oprah Show is that we spend our money on things that we really don't need. You know, we go through life spending our money unconsciously. And
you say in your book, Pay It Down, that if you can just scrape up $10 a day that you're spending now on other stuff, you can most people, the typical average American in debt, would get out of debt
in under 3 years. And then if you keep going with that $10 a day because you've gotten really good at it by this point, you build enough money to retire on. And it's just that simple. And you got to think about, what is $10 a day? You know, $10 a day is a movie ticket and popcorn. $10 a day is lunch at McDonald's for two kids. It's one pair of good control top pantyhose. You know, $10.
Well, I know that one.
Nothing.
Now you're talking my language.
And it's fairly easy to scrape it together, but you have to understand where your money is going now, and most of us don't, which is why one of the first steps on the debt diet is to start watching your money, start tracking your spending so that you can spend less than you make.
Gee, my wife, Melissa, I love her to death, but she's got to be the worst budgeteer on the face of the earth. She ought to wear an eye patch the way she spends money. She needs your help. Can I just ship her to you in a box? And if I ship her 3 days?
Send her to me in New York. I'm on the 17th floor. I'll be happy to have her.
Okay. And what I'll do is I'll save $10 by not sending her express. I'll send her to you nice and slow.
That's right.
That's good.
I'm already
send
starting.
Her regular mail.
Fine. We'll put her in one of those port containers, and we'll bribe the Dubai
good
people.
Good folks in Dubai, yeah.
Well, this is great, Gene. And so because you went through this, you're actually, and obviously you're a fancy, Wall Street Journal, Business Week bestseller, Today Show, a financial advisor. You're helping other people. Have you had people call you and tell you, thank you, you've saved my life?
Absolutely. I have had a number of people call me and say, oh my gosh, this has made such a difference. This plan has made such a difference. I'm working with these folks on the Oprah Show. I moved in with a family in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they are by no means out of debt yet, but they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And what they're feeling is that this has not only given them back their financial freedom to make the choices that they want to make, but that it's given them back their family life. The problem with debt is that it weighs so heavily on your conscience, on your mind, that it really ruins relationships. It ruins marriages. I mean, you joke about being angry at your wife for being the worst budgeter on the planet. That's nothing compared with what a lot of people with serious debt issues face. Marriages fall apart over this, and with this particular family, we've given them back their family life.
Looking through the book, there's lots of good tips, way to prioritize your expenses, what's actually important, where maybe you could cut out some money. On the back is the price, which is $12.95. You should have pushed hard to make this book $10. I think that would have been
it's $10. You can get it in paperback for $10 on Amazon.com.
All right,
look at
right.
you.
You got to get it at a discount place. You can pay $12.95 if you're stupid.
Uh-huh.
But if you go to the right place, then Gene will tell you it's
the
smartest $12.
That's right. Or you know what? Go to your library. If you can't afford the $10, this is all about getting out of debt. Go to your library. That is fine with me.
Jean doesn't need the money.
No,
she's trying
no.
to help you.
She
that's
just
it.
Saved us $12.
That's right. Jean, thank you very much. Oh, by the way, you moving in with a family in debt?
Yeah.
I smell reality series. Would you do it every week?
Oh, yeah. I was very careful to try to be a good house guest. But, yes, it does have shades of Super Nanny, doesn't it?
It does. Gene Chatsky in New York. She would be in with a different family every week. She'd be going, you don't need that ice cream sundae.
It's the wallet police.
No.
Thanks, Gene. Have a good
Goodbye.
Time.
Okay, see ya.
A couple of years ago, weeks ago, 60 Minutes had this fascinating segment with our, and maybe they talked to him a few years ago as well, because I think they've been following this story for a while, with our guest, Governor Brian Schweitzer. Governor Schweitzer feels that the answer to our country's future energy needs is the Montana High Plains and the billions of tons of coal that are deposited there. While the thought of coal mining brings to mind dangerous, polluting, bad working conditions, and the notion of using it for power makes you think of smokestacks belching pollution. The governor says that his plan is safe, efficient, and even environmentally friendly. Honorable Governor Brian Schweitzer, welcome to the Bob River Show, sir.
Well, it is an honor to be on your show this morning, and most of the people that are listening right now in your listening area, they're listening by virtue of the electrons that they have purchased from Montana. The utilities on the West Coast have been buying electricity from Montana, from our dams and from our coal-fired plants for the last 25 years.
You know, we don't think of coal that much anymore because it's, you know, we no longer shovel it into our furnace to heat our house or anything, and coal is kind of the forgotten energy source. Isn't
well,
it?
You know what, and if we're gonna handle coal the way we have for the last 100 years, it ought to be the forgotten source. It's a four-letter word. You know, coal as a source of energy, when used in the following way: you dig it, you crush it, you ignite it, make a big ball of flame, and then you superheat water to make a steam, and then that steam you direct to a turbine. You turn the turbine, you generate electricity. Then you build a big old smokestack. You make that smokestack so high that all the mercury and sulfur you put up that stack will go to somebody else's backyard. But we're kind of running out of backyards around the world. So this process that I'm talking about, coal gasification, is removing the energy from coal with no smokestack in a pressurized chamber and leaving all the bad stuff behind, including 100% of the mercury and sulfur, and it's able to divert the carbon dioxide as a pure product, CO2, and then you can pump it back into the earth and sequester it.
Now, on the 60 Minutes program, in which you were astounding on that show, by the way.
Astounding.
You must have enjoyed
it. Wasn't that $5 I gave you before we started to say something nice
Hold
about
on.
Me? That's working already.
Well, astounding. Barnum and Bailey is astounding, too.
Is anybody on the drums around there?
Yes. I don't necessarily believe it all until I learn more, but you were an amazing evangelist for this. On that show, you had Leslie Stahl, first of all. You got her in high heels down in a coal field, which I thought was fantastic. But you also you created this liquid that looked like bottled water from Fiji that you said came from the coal. And I wanted to know more about, and this would be replacing gasoline in our cars?
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you tell me more about that?
That particular product that I showed on that show was actually diesel, or a synthetic diesel. But the difference between it and the diesel that people burn right now is the diesel you burn right now has sulfur in it, 350 parts per million. This has zero. The diesel you're burning right now has aromatics in it. This has zero. When you burn this in a diesel engine, there's no black smoke because there's no particulate matter, and you don't put any sulfur in the atmosphere, so it's much cleaner.
That's after you have it. Now, getting it, aren't you destroying the home where the buffalo roam and the deer and the antelope play? I mean, they can't play in the middle of a coal field.
Dang, cowboy, you're getting all tangled up in your spurs again. What we're doing here is not mining in the way that you see in West Virginia or Pennsylvania. People don't crawl down under a hole. They don't take the top of a mountain off. These are the prairies of eastern Montana where coal is very close to the surface. Within 20, 40, 50 feet of the surface, you have a big bed of coal. What you do, and I'm a soil scientist, I understand this chemistry and physics and biology, is you peel off the surface 8 inches or foot, that's the topsoil, and you put that in a separate pile.
You save that for later. This is like one of those cooking shows.
It's the kind of clay and sandstone and shale that's above the coal, and you put that in a separate pile.
Save the topsoil, move the coal over here, separate the coal.
It's like a cooking show, yes.
You use that
All lady. Right, now,
okay.
Hey, somebody pick up a stick and hit him.
Okay.
So then you dig the coal out, you use big front loaders, and you just drive right out of this pit you've created. When the coal seam has been removed, then you replace the overburden, you put the topsoil back on, and you plant the native vegetation.
And you have basically a park in a brand new valley that you've created, and kids can play on it, and you haven't polluted it? There's no toxic waste or anything
no,
like that?
No, in fact, it's better than when you get
before.
To some of the areas where we've been doing this for the last 30 years and sending electrons to Seattle and Portland, you'll see that it looks exactly like the terrain around it. You, to the untrained eye, you wouldn't see any difference.
And you took Leslie Stahl to one of these parks, and she seemed to enjoy it.
Well, unfortunately, she liked my dog better than she liked me.
Yeah, I noticed
but that happens a lot.
So do you go in, Governor, and you post signs telling the antelope, you know, we're going to scrape all the prairie grass off in about a month, so you need to
folks, the park's closed.
Governor, you can sense that Joe's one of them environmental wackos. Go ahead.
Well, Joe, you're a great guy, and so you'll understand this. India and China are rapidly trying to introduce their population to middle-class values. They're going to be producing electricity during the next 40 and 50 years, and their only source of energy in both India and China is coal. Now, currently, they are building dozens of coal-fired plants all over India and China using old technology, old smokestack technology. At the rate that they're building those conventional coal-fired plants, they will put more carbon dioxide and mercury into the atmosphere during the next 30 years than the whole world collectively has during the last 100. I'm trying to develop this technology...
Here in the United States, by the way, where we should be leading the world.
Thank you. Producing zero-emission coal energy creating the technology, improving the technology, and then transferring that technology to India and China so that they don't destroy the world, even if we do get clean in the United States.
One of the other things that came up in the 60 Minutes piece was how much of Montana are we talking, you know, how's it going to look when we fly a plane over Montana? How much of the actual land space in Montana are you talking about wanting to use?
Squat minus one. You know, we have 95 million acres in Montana, we're talking about over the course of 40 years disturbing maybe 25 to 50,000 acres.
Right, and how many acres are in Montana?
95 million?
95 million.
Yeah.
Wow. That's just one good-sized ranch.
Oh, and by the way, a third of that is public land, and about half of that is wildlands, the most remarkable wildlands left on the planet.
Could you reforest that, release some quail in there, and maybe get the Republicans on board to support this?
Well, look, there are some things that I support among the Republicans. For example, Dick Cheney, he demonstrated down there in Texas that you could shoot your lawyer and get him to apologize to you.
Isn't that great?
That's something.
You know, I mean, I think we could sell tickets like that in Montana.
Yeah, that could be an annual event.
Lawyer hunt.
Lawyer palooza. So, and by the way, in case you don't know, folks, I believe you're a Democrat, and yet you're a pro-gun. You confuse some Democrats with this pro-business, pro-coal, pro-gun.
You want to run snowmobiles in Yellowstone, right?
That's right.
Well, we have snowmobiles in Yellowstone. You know, we don't want to run snowmobiles in Yellowstone like we did 10 years ago, where we had 1,500 of them with two-stroke engines running into the park, chasing wildlife all over hell. What we have now is about 250 machines per day. They're four-cycle, they're cleaner, nice. They're quieter, and you need to ride with a guide.
Nice.
Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about here, from West Yellowstone to Old Faithful during the summer, an average of 6,000 cars drive every day. During the winter, we have 250 snowmobiles. Do the math there, cowboys. I mean, this is much cleaner, and what we're trying to do is to spread the seasons into Yellowstone Park. It's a remarkable place in the winter, and we can do it right.
Governor Brian Schweitzer in Montana. The governor is well-spoken. The governor is, he's a Democrat that conservatives could like. He's a feisty guy. He's entertaining. He's not at all stumped by the media in interviews. He comes across well. Governor, couldn't you run for president someday?
Of what? I am
Rotary?
Governor,
I don't know.
For 1 year in a state with 920,000 people. I haven't held any elected office before this one. So, that sounds a little strange. And you folks over on the coast, you get to smoking those pine cones and you come up with kooky notions. Take
Governor,
it easy. Take a deep
you
breath.
See what I'm saying? Governor, the media loves this guy.
You
the
look
camera
good in flannel,
loves him.
Too, sir.
You know, we don't really care if you're any good. We just want someone that doesn't look like a doofus up there.
Well, look, I think it doesn't hurt to have Democrats that can shoot straight and rope a calf and put the brand on the right place. We are a party that respects the individual and respects the wildlands that we have. Montana has the most remarkable rivers and streams and open spaces, and we're going to protect them. Next generation and the generation after it, people from the coast are going to say, giddy up, let's go to Montana, best place in the world.
Governor, when 60 Minutes put the tough question to you of how realistic these plans are and who's on board, you had a very good answer, I thought. You said everyone wants to be the second to build the first coal plant of this type.
Everybody wants to be the first to build the second plant.
The first to build the second,
There's a plant, a small plant being built right now in Pennsylvania. There's a plant that is being built. The Pennsylvania plant, they're already breaking ground. There's a plant that's being built in Illinois, 2,000 barrels. There's a plant in Mississippi that's being built, 11,000 barrels. There's a company out of Denver, Rentec, that's building the plants in Illinois and Mississippi. The company Sasol, the South African company, is in a consortium that's building the plant in Pennsylvania.
So how close are you to getting the first really big one built in Montana?
Well, I haven't got anybody writing the check yet, but all the big players around the world in coal gasification have been up here. We're kicking the tires. They're kicking the tires. That's General Electric. That is the Shell Oil Company. That's the Southern Company, a utility out of the Southeast. It's Sasol, the big company out of South Africa that's been doing this for 40 years, and more, Rentec, Centrolium. So there are a lot of companies from around the world that recognize that we can do it cleaner in Montana than any place else in the world, and that our electrons are very close to the market on the West Coast. You folks on the West Coast are going to need energy. Your choice right now is to decide whether you want to trust those of us in Montana or trust dictators from around the world to be your supplier of fuels. We think you can trust us more than you can a bunch of folks from the Middle East and Africa.
Governor, how long will the coal hold out? If we get your plant up and running, and your plant up and running, how much coal we got, 20, 30, 40 years worth?
Well, let's just do a little math here. They estimate that Montana alone has 120 billion ton. Now, that's if we developed all the coal, and we won't get anywhere near that. But we can get about 2 barrels of oil with every ton of coal. So that's 240 billion barrels. We only consume 6 billion barrels per year. So just Montana alone, and we only have a third of the coal in the United States. So if a small part of Montana's coal were developed, we could be a very significant replacer of imported oil.
I've got an idea.
Stop there. We think biodiesel is a great opportunity. We have safflower, canola, camelina, soybeans. We think ethanol, not only corn, but low-protein wheat, barley, even these things like switchgrass, we could produce, certainly, within the next 10 years, with all of these in the portfolio, and wind power, by the way, we could replace imported oil 10 years from now. But we need leadership in the White House that does more than just say, we are addicted to oil. We need leadership in the White House that looks us in the eye and says, America, we are addicted to oil, and I have a plan. And today, I'm challenging every single school in America to train the next engineers to develop energy conservation and efficiencies and new energy sources. We will have public-private partnerships. This will be a Manhattan slash go to the moon within 10 years program. If this president would challenge the ingenuity and innovation, if he would challenge the engineers from this country, we could create clean technologies that would drive our economy and export to the rest of the world for generations to come. We need leadership like that in Washington, D.C.
Governor Brian Schweitzer.
New sheriff in town.
That's right. I have a plan B for you that could work a lot quicker. Have a referendum, rename Montana, call it Iraq. They'll be there in a week.
Yeah, the problem is that in Montana,
he's kidding, sir.
we have 920,000 people in Montana and about 6 million guns. Mm. Somebody comes into Montana, they're going to leave a lot faster than they came in, I can tell you.
Governor Schweitzer.
Don't mess with Montana.
All right, a pleasure talking with you, sir. We will be watching you carefully.
All right, Cowboys, and listen, go easy on Montana. We're good people, and it's a great place to visit.
5 weeks after he was seriously injured in a roadside bomb attack in Iraq, ABC anchorman Bob Woodruff, just in case you were wondering, is still hospitalized. Now he's able to speak a few words and has even taken a few steps. It's going to be a long road back for Bob. He's a fighter, though. They say he will be back. The recently named co-anchor of ABC's World News Tonight, who, by the way, is not obviously doing interviews, I guess Pedro talked him into it on the phone somehow. And we've got him on the phone. Please welcome from his hospital room in the Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, ABC News anchor Bob Woodruff. Bob, hello.
Hello? Hello?
Bob?
Hello?
Bob?
Hello?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Barely through the bandages. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine, Bob.
Oh, good.
Bob, Pedro called and asked you to come on with us. Thank you for agreeing to do that.
Well, I want to say that Pedro, the guy you got there, is a gem.
He is a gem.
Don't ever lose him. He's a very persuasive young man. Mm. He promised. I'm not doing interviews currently. It's still very painful.
Your face is bandaged up, yeah.
Through my head.
Yeah.
I've been having some difficulty speaking, and there's a lot of painkillers. But the Pedro promised me if I did this interview, he would show me the tunnel he used to get into this country. ABC News exclusive. Because soon as I'm back in the chair there. So
very
I appreciate
good.
To him rallying out his entire family
right.
to get this interview. He's a very industrious young man.
Are you on some good painkillers?
Yes, the government here at Bethesda Naval is taking very, very good care of me. They sent a courier up to Canada to buy some good painkillers, the good stuff we ship to Canada.
Good stuff from Canada, that's good.
So really, it's difficult. It's been a difficult world. But I really appreciate all the support from our fans at ABC World News and from, again, the staff here at Bethesda.
Boy, you didn't get to be sitting in that cushy anchor chair for long, huh, before this happened. And by the way, we were glad to hear that you were wearing your body armor. I understand that if you had not had the armor on, you and your cameraman would have been in... probably in unrecoverable situation.
Yeah, well, I do really have to thank the Lord Almighty for that one. Doug Vaud, our cameraman, is amazing, brilliantly talented cameraman, and he's pretty good with the body armor too. Doug was sent home today.
Yeah.
Doug was the guy who built. We had to build our own body armor, by the way.
I thought you had really good state of the art body armor.
Well, I'm not going to put the clap on that they made soldiers wear. I wouldn't be here today if that was the case.
You had some special body armor.
Well, Doug made it from the MREs, the meals ready to eat, that the Army gives us to eat over there.
Uh huh.
Doug figured out that these things would stop shrapnel. So we just fashioned up a vest out of the MREs and wore those. I just wish I'd put on a face protector because it took quite a few pieces of shrapnel to the head.
It's a shame what happened to you, Mr. Woodruff, and Elizabeth Vargas, who is going to be your co-host, is pregnant. She's going to be taking a leave as well. Now, I don't believe any of this, you know, crazy stuff, but some conspiracy people are saying it's the ghost of Peter Jennings that are making these things happen. Is there any way that her impregnation or...
Is Peter Jennings' child? Boy, that'd be a new story, wouldn't it?
You don't believe any of that crazy stuff?
No. I don't, you know, that's a fascinating piece of information, but I don't think that Peter Jennings fathered Elizabeth Vargas' child, no. If that's what you're asking me. The painkillers got me a little woozy. I'm feeling a little lightheaded here.
I'm sorry to even bring that up.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Poor guy alone.
Yeah, it's tabloid talk.
That's all right.
So you've made some amazing progress the past few days. I also heard that your brother or sister went in to visit you and that your face is fine now. You're going to be up and at him. You're going to be back on the air. You're going to be anchoring the evening news again.
I hope so. You know, I was really feeling down in the dumps, and I was feeling very self-pity was starting to take hold of me. But then my brother reminded me, you know, that if I don't get back in that anchor chair, I'll have to work at radio. And boy, that got me up quick. That was a motivating factor, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I guess I understand. You speak several different languages.
I do. Is that right?
Bob Woodruff, ABC World News Tonight anchor. Can you give us maybe some example? You've spoken a few words in Chinese and German, I understand?
Well, yeah. So, you know, when you work, we're doing stories that I have around the planet, it helps to speak the local vernacular. The doctor said was a very encouraging sign of my brain recovery that I could remember not just English but also the other languages I know. For example, Ding Shuang Tai Fa, or the Chinese phrase I spoke yesterday.
And what did that mean?
It means no freaking way I'm getting back into a Hummer anytime soon. I thought that was a very important phrase to know. Yeah.
And I suppose you have a German one too.
Ich bin ein Duschbag, which means, of course, who picked this car and why are we driving in the front of this column?
Got it.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Have they brought anybody to justice for the attack on your convoy?
Well, these attacks on our troops, they figure they don't think we were targeted, per se. Our particular convoy, we just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Although a woman wearing a burqa striking resemblance to Elizabeth Vargas was seen in the area prior to our attack with a man who looked a lot like Peter Jennings. I don't, you know, that's what I've heard. I don't think they've made any arrests.
When you recover, Mr. Woodruff, and we wish you a speedy recovery.
Thank you.
I'm sure you will. Are you going to be a little more selective in the assignments you take? Do you think you'll stick behind the anchor's desk a little more and a little less out in the field reporting in dangerous places?
I will take you know, the occasional field assignments called Kitten Palooza. I probably go work
Kitten Palooza.
That seems pretty safe to me, but I would like to stay behind the desk for quite a while.
All right. Bob Woodruff, thank you, Bob. Be well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the good warm thoughts of your people in Seattle.
Mike Jones, yes?
As if that bit weren't disrespectful enough, we close with the theme to NBC Nightly News.
I just noticed that.
Sorry about that. It should have been the ABC theme. Mike White has made over $1 million in his 7-year career, and he only works for a few seconds a week. How would you like to get in on that kind of action? Of course, it's difficult work. In Mike's line of work, it only takes a second to end your career. Mike White is a world champion bull rider. Mike White, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Thank you.
All right. Now,
how y'all doing?
Good.
Wonderful.
Good. When did you decide you wanted to be a bull rider? Was it very young?
Real young, probably 6 years old. I grew up watching it on TV, and I'd always dreamed of being a world champion bull rider.
Now, there used to be rodeos where there would be bull riding, cow riding, calf roping, the whole bit. It's gotten so big now that bull riding is a sport in itself.
It is, and you know, we got to, us younger guys got to look up to, you know, the guys that we were growing up watching. They went out on their own and farmed this, the PBR, which is strictly bull riding, and it's made it to where we can make a really good living at it now.
That's wonderful because you may not, that living may go away at any time. And I got to ask you, do you feel like other athletes are like wussies? I mean, like a baseball guy will go, oh, my hamstring hurts, so I guess I'll retire. I mean, you guys, you must have aches and pains all the time.
We do, you know, and you know, some other athletes are like, say, NASCAR driving. They say, well, we wouldn't get on no bull. But then I wouldn't get in no race car and drive with 50 other guys bumping my bumper and trying to run me into the wall either.
Strap a tank of gas at 200 mile an hour.
A NASCAR, NASCAR drivers, they get out, they practice. Football players practice. Baseball players practice. There's really, you guys don't practice, right? There's no way to practice riding a bull.
Right. We don't, you know, most of the guys don't practice because we're getting on bulls every weekend and, when you take the chance of getting out and practicing, you take the chance of getting hurt.
Right. If you did practice,
maybe being out for 6 weeks or 8 weeks.
If you did practice, they couldn't call it the bullpen because that's already taken.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, do you guys look at tape of your rides and analyze it that way? I mean, how do you train?
Yeah, you know, we a lot of guys record their rides and go back and watch it and see what they done wrong and go from there.
When you
try to correct it the next time.
Sure.
When you are in that few seconds before the gate opens, it seems to be the highest apprehension, the most tension. Certainly, me watching it on TV, which I did recently for the first time, by the way, there's a whole bunch of anticipation and sort of looking at the bull to see how the bull looks. But the bull doesn't let on until the gate's open. You know, every bull is a little different, I guess. But what goes through your mind? And is the ride decided in the first second or two by how you start? I mean, it seems that if you get off to a good start, you're going to have a good ride. And if he's got you a little off balance at the very beginning, it's going to be really hard to hold on for the 8 seconds. Am I reading it right?
Well, you know, you're exactly right. Most people can tell whether I'm going to stay on whether the first two jumps. You know, it's such a big deal of getting out of the chute and getting a good start on the bull because it all starts from right there. And if you're a little off, then, you know, 2,000 pounds jerking you around, you more than likely ain't going to get back to the middle of them.
And what's interesting about your profession is that you don't want the bull to give you a good ride because you'll be penalized if that happens.
Well, you know, as far as you take me or another bull rider, Chris Shivers, somebody that wants to win, we want to get on the ranked bulls because if you get on the ranked bulls, that's the bulls you're going to win on, and that's what makes our career.
Now, Mike White, we're talking to professional championship bull rider. Mike, in the NBA, of course, you have trash talk to get your opponent fired up. Do you do that with the bull at all?
Your mom was a cow. Those are the ugliest udders I've ever seen.
We don't do none of that.
No.
Your dad was Spain, wasn't he? A neuter. You call them horns?
What do you do when you get a kind of a lame ride? How do you fire up a bull? Do you pull on it? Do you kick on it? Do you talk dirty to it? What do you do?
You see Brokeback Mountain? Really do. You know, if the bull don't perform, they'll give you the option for a re-ride where you can get on another bull and hopefully be a better one.
And bulls that don't perform, they become part of the Oh Boy Oberto.
Oh Boy Oberto is waiting for
you. Family.
Yeah, ones that don't perform, they're not around much longer.
That's right. Mike, it's a dangerous profession. Have you been injured, and do you carry with you the knowledge that at some point you could receive a lifelong injury?
Oh yeah, you know, I've been through probably more injuries than any cowboy on tour. I've broken my neck, I've crushed my skull, I've broken ribs, broken legs, arms, just about everything there is to break. But I love what I do, and it's a pretty good living while it lasts.
Mike, I see recently I'm watching a bull riding competition, and I see guys in what look like, for better of a lack of a better term, hockey helmets. You know, I know that these are guys have already suffered injuries and are trying to protect a pretty, you know, maybe a softer, you know, skull or whatever it is. Isn't there any way to make that thing look more like a 10-gallon hat? Because it just doesn't look right for a guy up on top of there with a skateboard helmet on.
You know, I don't know. I'm not much into those helmets. I've actually tried one when I was in college.
His neck, remember.
And it didn't go over so well. It just... I don't know if it's because I rode bulls so long without it and then tried to put one on. It just didn't feel right. So I'm kind of the old cowboy school, just go without it.
Old cowboy Mike White, professional bull rider. Mike, when you're out there riding, is there a nervous Betty Lou in the stands? Is there a woman who loves you sitting there and hanging on the edge of her seat?
Oh, you know, there's fans like that all over.
Okay, lots of them. That's not what I meant.
One in every corral, isn't there, Mike? Good for you, buddy.
Right. No, are you married? Do you have a girlfriend? I'll keep it.
I'm married.
Oh, you are married. Okay.
That's what we're asking, Mike.
That's what I meant. Because in the movies, of course, there would be this woman who would be there with her handkerchief. And
I can't watch!
And your wife's name is?
Hannah.
Hannah. Okay, Hannah. It's not, and I went with Betty Lou. That must have thrown you off. Yes, Joe, go ahead.
Yesterday we were debating a little bit, Mike, about what makes the bull kick. I know, obviously, he wants to get you off of him, but isn't there something they do on their backsides that makes them want to kick a little more?
Is it true they tie him up in the family jewelry box?
No, actually, it don't even touch that part of their body. Bulls are bred to buck, just like racehorses are bred to run. There's a bloodline for it, and they breed the bulls to buck. And when they put that flank, it's called a flank rope. It's just a cotton rope that goes around their flank.
Flank rope,
like a thong.
Yes,
it's
a bull thong.
Kick at their belly.
I ain't going out there in a bull thong.
The bull is embarrassed to be in a thong, as anybody would be.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so he wants to kick it. Well, Mike, this is for anyone who wants to see this. It's exciting. It's astounding. And he is one. You are one of the best in the business, Mike White, in Kansas City, Missouri, professional bullfighter.
Rider.
Oh, a writer, excuse me.
I know. It's okay. It's okay.
I hope to never have to fight one.
No, you don't want to do that.
That's the last day of your career.
Yes. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Joe's daughter asked him a question. She's six. Asked him a question.
She's seven now, but...
I keep saying six.
Yeah, she just
turned. It's like changing the date on the
check. I know. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Joe couldn't answer the question. Drum roll, please. Joe's a pretty smart guy. What question could a seven-year-old ask that Joe wouldn't know the answer to?
There's no deep moral thing here. It's just a question I don't think anybody could answer. I'm from Mississippi, and my dad just went there and
came. The show me state, by the way.
That's Missouri.
Oh.
Mississippi.
So where's our money?
Don't ask
state.
Me anything. That's Missouri, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He showed me.
I told her. I said, Granddad just got back from Mississippi. He's going to come
What's
over.
Mississippi if it's not the show me state?
It's the Magnolia State.
It's the Magnolia State. It's the poorest state in the Union. It's a lot of things.
So how do you spell that state?
MISSISSIPPI.
Yeah, that's the only thing the kids in Mississippi know how to spell. Name the state.
Yeah, okay. They are last
Toledo, I don't know. Altho? Is that a word?
Anyway. Once again, drum roll, please. Your daughter asked you a question you did not know the answer to. What was the question?
She said, Daddy, if there's a Mississippi, why isn't there a Mr. Sippy?
That was the question?
That was the question.
That you could not answer?
I couldn't answer that. I told you it was kind of not that important and kind of dumb.
No, but
let us make a break.
The fact
anyway.
That you couldn't answer it was interesting.
But it tells you how her mind works. She's a born comedian. I think she did that for a laugh because she's been telling me jokes lately. She knows more jokes than I know. And she just slays me. Like, that question slayed me. Obviously, it didn't have that effect on you.
No, it's funny if
you... Why isn't there a Mississippi? Well, because some fathers don't hang around to raise their river. That's why, honey. You need to pick a man that's going to be there when you bed down on a strange man.
That's what you should have said.
Mr. Sippy took off.
Yeah,
didn't make a single payment to the riverbank.
I had no good answer for her. I'll give you another example of her humor here. Because I think she was just trying to make me laugh with that one.
Sure.
Okay.
We wouldn't know anything about that.
No. What did the earthworm teacher say to the earthworm student when he was late for class?
What did the earthworm teacher say to the earthworm student when he was late for class? Let's give us a second on this.
Earthworm teacher say to the earthworm student when he was late for class.
I can usually guess these kids' jokes, but...
See, she does clever ones, like that wordplay with Mr. and Mrs.
Mr. and Mrs. Yeah. was pretty good,
You ready?
Yeah. What did the earthworm teacher say to the earthworm student when he was late to class?
Where in earth have you been? See, that slayed me.
Hi-yo! Yes!
Some jokes you can tell your kids from my kid.
She made that up?
I don't know where she got it
from. Oh, she read it in Highlights.
Yeah. They're hawking those joke books all day long.
She's more like Spike than you. She's stealing her jokes.
Yeah, that may be. Well, her follow-up joke, and this one isn't quite as good.
Well, if you like that, you'll love this.
What did the alien say when he landed in the garden?
What did the alien say when he landed in the garden? You know this one?
Take me to your weeder.
Ah, you stole my thunder.
Hi-yo! We're here till 3 o'clock. Is this milk cold?
Those are great jokes.
Those are fantastic jokes.
Coming from a seven-year-old, you know, that's pretty good. Now, maybe she did steal that one. You've heard that before, huh?
No, but it was a pretty natural play on words.
Really? You figured it out? That's good. That's good.
You mentioned that she's
not
that
easy.
Good play on words.
Mm-hmm. I was proud of her. Now, she won't do her math homework, but she'll sit there and write jokes.
Then you better, I hate to say it, but you better make sure she gets into radio.
Yeah. That'll be our plan 10 years from now. When you're finally tired of doing this, I'll have somebody that I can sit and talk to all day, or for 20 hours a week maybe. Has there been many daddy-daughter shows out there?
Ooh, that'd be kind of creepy.
No, the Steve Slayton Breakfast with the Beatles featuring Rose Slayton.
There you go.
She's that kid has got chops. You know.
Yeah, she's very good, but daddy-daughter comedy is kind of weird.
Well, we sleep together too, so.
What?
Well,
all right, Alabama. Alabama, Arkansas.
We don't sleep together every night, but she still crawls in there.